For January 27th, 2017, we talk about Pokemon Duel, the new Dark Souls 3 DLC announcement, and we ask you about your dream game. Welcome to Level 182. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I'm trying to think of things that I can say for banter here, anything big that's going on. The only thing that's happened that is not like weird and personal is I figured out you can set an Amazon Echo to respond to the word computer. It's like a little feature inside of it. So instead of saying the actual the word, the name that people use to activate the thing, you can go all Star Wars or Star Trek with it and say, you know, computer, what's the frequency, all of that. So that's been my day of things that are worth talking about.
You need to go for like a one syllable name to maximize efficiency.
but that also increases that increases the likelihood that you're going to trigger it by accident.
Mm-hmm. That increases the fun is what I hear you saying.
You'll accidentally buy Amazon.
It's oh no. Jeffy. A light goes on in Bezos' office and he looks out the window and says, I'm free. I'm finally free.
So I literally tried to do this with the Rumble, the Echo, is when I went, let's get ready to Rumble. It would start going, da 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 da. Could not get it to work.
Oh, that's got a lot of joke stuff built into it. what's going on with y'all? Anything big going on?
Well, I have a useful thing that I found out that maybe is useful for other people, but it's like really inane and you know, whatever. So I had to fill a prescription and my insurance does not have a drug plan and I'm on a high deductible plan, whatever, so I gotta pay all that out of pocket. Well, I was going to have to pay like $150 for this thing, and I'm like, no. So I looked around, and I found Blink Health, which is really awesome. You pay, it has an app and a website, and you can buy, you basically pay for whatever your prescription is, and then you present at your pharmacy. Like, you go to the pharmacy, have it placed as normal, but when it's time to pay, you just hand them this app, and then they put it in, like, a coupon, and then you pay less. Like, it was $40 versus $150.
That's so nuts.
It's not an insurance. It's just, like, a thing, you know, like a coupon code, basically. Like, my doctor sometimes would give me coupon codes. It's kind of like that. Hmm. So that's a thing. So that might be useful for other people who have the same kind of issue and have to buy medicine. So
yeah. So if you want to pay one third of what a thing costs for absolutely no reason, because the value of these things is completely unhinged from the actual stuff that goes into them. God, that just infuriates me so much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it was a big relief to me because right at the moment, finances are pretty tight. So, you know, that's a thing. So, that's a good thing. So Blink Health is a good thing.
Yeah, that's not commercial or anything. That's just...
No, it's just...
It's just a pro, pro tip life hack.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, it's been on, like, national news and stuff as well as a thing for people to check out. Weird. And, you know... Given how Affordable Care Act is, you know, up in the air right at the moment, insofar as what's going to happen with that, people in America might need that a lot.
Yeah. So.
There's another service where it'll, like, it's online and it's like a website someone developed where it'll look up stuff for when you try and have a parking ticket, and it will try and make it so that it'll like auto appeal for you so that you don't have to do any of the work for doing that. But I think it's only in certain cities, like it's in San Francisco and a couple other cities.
Yeah.
Of course it's in San Francisco.
Yeah.
In San Francisco. David's in San Francisco.
Aww. Damn it, David. Nah. I miss David. One day David will be back, but it probably won't be when I'm on, so.
I'll take a dive next week,
just statistically.
Statistically, I usually sub out for him. It's not that I clubbed him on the head or anything.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you? Wink.
I have had the normalest of normal weeks possible. Like, there was absolutely nothing super eventful about the week.
That's just exciting sometimes, you know? Like, thank God I had a normal week.
So I expect you guys to be extra weird on this episode to add some flavor.
I'm already so low energy. I don't know that we have much hope of it. Ben, how about you?
We'll find it.
I'm on sinus medication, so I mean, like, maybe, but I might just float off. Ben.
Yeah, I'm more on the dentist side. It's a pretty normal week. Following the news stories has been interesting. It seems very Orwellian, but we don't need to talk about that since we're talking about video games.
Yep.
I did do that over the weekend. I marched in Austin, which was fun. Awesome. Which I realized that I don't know how to protest, and I feel very uncomfortable in protesting situations because I don't like yelling things, so I'm silent and just feel weird in a crowd. So it was interesting.
I actually feel kind of remiss because I've had so many personal life things going on that kind of like all the protest march and stuff just kind of like passed me by because I was trying to take care of my family. So, you know, like I'm like, oh, that was a thing that happened in the world and I missed it. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's not like it's probably not going to be the only one. So there's next time.
There will be plenty of reason to march
next time. Yeah.
I missed it because I was sick, but I got invited to it here in Cincinnati. I have no idea how big the turnout was.
Yeah, see, I'm sick, too. I'm getting over a sinus infection, so that's also a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Austin's was really good, though. I'm assuming there were lots of people because Austin's pretty chill and awesome.
Yeah, there is a good turnout. But, yeah, whatever.
Glad to hear it.
Fantastic. Well, why don't we go on and get started with the show? Do some... yes?
No, I was cheering. Oh, okay. Go for it.
why don't we go on and do the rest of the show? We've got the usual kind of thing for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And we're going to get started with...
The Brief.
The Brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. I'm going to do one here real quick because it's obligate. At the very least, it makes a lot of sense for the people who are listening. The details for the the second DLC pack for Dark Souls 3 have been announced, including the name, the price, and the release date. So it's going to be $15 coming out on March the 28th. It's going to be called The Ringed City. And it's going to follow up appropriately enough on the stories of both the main game and the first DLC, The Ashes of Ariandel. There's a trailer out. There are screenshots of different enemies that it's very hard to find a context to put them in. So it's hard to say how useful they will be to you if you're trying to speculate. But there's no real information about PvP stuff, so it looks like this is going to be primarily a single player or player versus environment kind of thing. They've got some flavor text talking about a city of madness at the end of the world, usual Dark Souls kind of stuff. It's a little crazy. This is the longest, I don't know if it's the longest we've had to wait, but this is about a year out from the release of Dark Souls 3. You know, at the end of March has kind of traditionally been, that Q1 kind of area has traditionally been when the next Souls game comes out. So this thing has not been rushed, apparently, and, you know, with how disappointed we were in the DLC or the first DLC, there's an awful lot riding on this for me personally. Also, on top of this, they're doing like a game of the year style thing, Dark Souls 3, the Fire Fades Edition, which will have all that packed in on April the 21st.
Now, will anything short of having the title that comes up when you kill the end boss be like, "We're sorry," write Dark Souls 3 in your mind?
I don't know. They can probably... there are a couple of holes they can try and plug in, and there are also a lot of faux pas that they could just cease to indulge in. that would at least make this thing work for me a lot better. I have no idea. There's nothing in the material in the screenshots or the trailer that feel like an overt and crass callback. So that's good. Who knows if it's going to reconcile? Who knows if it's going to reconcile the entire product and make it all make sense, especially from a story perspective.
That's too much to put on the shoulders of a DLC. I think what you can hope for is it to be like contained in and of itself, a really good bit of Dark Souls.
Yeah.
And asking it to fix the wrongs of the previous game and DLC feels like setting yourself up for huge disappointment.
Yeah. It's that is not a reasonable tack to take to expect this to do that. Like, it's the case where from up until this most recent pack has done amazing DLC that has actually made the base game better, mm-hmm. not completely rewrote it, but puts it either in a different light or adds some cool stuff that can be taken from the expansion into the main thing, doubles the length of the game, as is the case with the Scholar stuff. Like, the DLC has been really good. Like, I just hope that they've given themselves the extra time they've given themselves will make this thing really shine.
I like the gusto. It was the same week. Was this the same day as the Star Wars title and poster and date announcement?
Oh, the Last Jedi.
Yep.
Yes.
I have no idea. I can't recall. I remember. I woke up one day, this was like Monday, it was either Monday or Sunday, and everybody had messaged me or tweeted at me saying, "Hey, this thing is a thing." So
I like the idea that just one of the perks of your role on Bonfireside Chat is that you never have to go searching for Dark Souls news again. It will be actively, give it to you.
Yep, because everybody wants to be the first. the first was Allison. The first one to bring to my attention. So thank
you,
Allison.
That's not surprising.
I know, right?
Allison was the first related to a thing with my brief too.
Yep, she's on top of it. So why don't we talk about that? What's your brief that you brought?
Well, so you were talking about how long it takes for that DLC to come out. Well, Resident Evil 7's DLCs, they're coming out really soon. Now, Allison, just a disclaimer, Allison did not send me this article. However, Allison did just finish the game in one sitting right after it launched. So so that's what Allison did. Awesome job, Allison.
Yeah, so she's already finished it. Keep in mind. Oh, whoops, that's weird. Hey, don't autoplay that video. IGN, what the fuck are you doing?
No.
Sorry. Sorry.
So she's going to be waiting for this DLC to come out. There's two DLCs. Yeah, there's two DLCs that are going to be coming out. Band Footage Volume 1 and 2. They are coming to PS4 on January 31st and February 14th, respectively. And with the releases on Xbox One and PC on February 21st. So, it's a week. And then, a couple of weeks after that, bam, there's all the DLC. Okay, well, one thing that irritates the crap out of me, and I'll talk more about the actual DLC content in a minute, but the thing is that, I looked at Steam, right? Pull it up. Game is, $70, whatever. Okay, well, then to buy all the DLC and the whatever, then it's, $90. And it's, they already had the stuff made. They just want to make you pay more money to get these things that they call DLCs, and they're just, dropped right after the game came out. Really? That's ridiculous. So, but then again, Capcom's been pretty crap about that. That's kind of why I have protested and not gotten Street Fighter V, is because, to get the actual base game is fine. It's not that expensive. But then every DLC is, $30, and it's got, characters or other, stuff that you actually want in it. And mm-hmm. so it's like by the time you rack all of that up, yeah, you're paying a pretty penny even on a sale price. So. Yeah. So anyway, like that's just me and my grumping about Capcom. But anyway, continuing on about the actual DLC for Resi 7. Banned Footage 1 will include 2 tape missions and a new game mode. There's going to be one of those missions is going to be a room escape, which is awesome. Yep. The other one is going to be a wave-based survival mission. That's also awesome. There's also the new mode, Ethan Must Die, and it's described as being a tough-as-nails mode separate from the tapes and story of the main game. That didn't tell me anything about what it is other than, like, but whatever.
Clearly,
so it's
you
like,
don't have enough experience with nails. Like, that's very informative to a carpenter.
Right. Well, actually, my dad was a carpenter for many years, and I helped him out, so I was slave labor. I'm pretty acquainted with nails. All right, so Banned Footage number 2, which is the second DLC, will have 2 more tape missions and a game mode called Jack's 55th Birthday, which is a comical extra game where you need to, quote, feed Jack tons of food. That sounds kind of disturbing to me.
Actually, weird. I have no context for this, so I don't know who Jack is.
I don't either. So the 2 missions that you get are one where
you
gamble.
Would you say you don't know Jack?
Yes,
I would say that. Thank you.
I didn't even facepalm at that because I was waiting for it. So, all right. The missions include one where you gamble your body parts with some guy, and then the other focuses on the Baker family prior to the start of the main game. Hmm. So,
what body parts can you gamble?
I don't know.
Oh, you bet your ass.
Dude, we got the dad jokes on lock tonight.
If it's gonna be that kind of party, yeah.
I started it before pre-roll, before we even started recording with the whole Holy Toledo thing. So, damn it, I started that, Matt.
It's your fault. Mm-hmm. Oh man.
All right. Anyway, yeah. That's all I got. So DLCs, they happen. They're gonna be a thing. And they're going to be like within a month of release of the game. So
yeah, so I guess I better jump on this.
According to
Allison, play the game.
Well, according to Allison, she finished the game in 7.5 hours. So
yeah.
That's finished the game in 7.5 hours because I spend way too much time looking at things, and I'll talk about that in the grind.
Yeah, especially as since it's this first person exploration kind of deal. I'm jazzed about it. Like I said, I've got it sitting behind me. I got that and Doom on the same day. So,
ooh, nice.
Yeah. Let's see here, Ben. How about you?
Yeah. So today they announced the Oscar nominations. The big one was La La Land got a bunch of nominations, whatever. But we're not a movie podcast. So the story that pertains to video games, kind of, is that the first VR Oscar-nominated short film was announced. So this is kind of a step into the future. The name of the movie is Pearl, and it's about a dad who lives with his daughter in a car. And it's supposed to be sad. I have not watched it yet. But
you can tell from that screenshot it's going to be sad.
Yeah,
it looks sad. Look at those tones. That's too warm and too sweet and too happy, and you know something bad's going to happen minute.
There's not a lot of happy stories where they're living out of a car, either, right? So.
And that movie just had such great tones.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool that medium is starting to develop. One of the directors who made it said that he wanted to focus more on like shorter, more emotional types of movies, since that's not as taxing on the technology, I guess. Mm-hmm.
I'm curious about this. I'm also curious if there is like a flat cut of it, like something that you could actually watch without VR.
Yeah, I think right now, you can watch it on the Vive. You can watch it on the Cardboard, like Google Cardboard.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And you can also watch it on YouTube, and it's a 360 video, so you can drag around the video.
Okay, yeah. Well, that'd do it.
So there's some options, but
I, I really like how Cole was just kind of like not sold on it when you were like, yeah, it's on the cardboard. And like, no.
the cardboard is like it's the shittiest version of it. But it's also like one that you can for next to no money, you can experience something that is like it. Basically, the thing is like, hey, this is cool and a gimmick, but a movie is only as good as how accessible it is to see. I think. I mean, yeah, there are lots of things that go into quality or whatever. It's hard to get excited about a movie that I could only, or a short film I could only watch with an $800 headset. Much like it's very difficult for me to personally get excited. Like, I can hear about all kinds of amazing VR experiences, but I'm just not going to be invested in it unless I can get a piece of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe a vote against just watching it on YouTube is it talks about the sound design is really good to convey like motion and atmosphere and stuff. So I don't think that would convey in the YouTube 360. Although I could be wrong. I don't know what their setup is.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
I assume if you just it might have that encoded like stereo encoded.
Yeah, headphones.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah. Weird. So this is called Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is gonna die.
Hopefully it's just the car.
I'm laughing, but wow, I'm thinking about my car because my car.
Oh, sorry. Too soon.
My house. I crashed my house. Terrible.
That's sad.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you? What you got? Wait,
the house has radiator heat.
Okay.
I'm trying, guys. I'm trying real hard. I'm not a dad yet.
For me, yeah. There's a new game out. This little franchise you might have heard of called Pokemon. They completely just slipped a whole new game onto mobile. With absolutely no fanfare, I had not heard anything about this game. Apparently, it's been out like in Japan for a while, and they just kind of casually, flipped it over to be available on our side of the globe, which blows my mind. Because like having no idea that this was even coming, I was able to go and download and play this game, which is a Pokemon-ass Pokemon game. Like. If you had to ask me to predict what a Pokemon game on, iOS would look like before I had seen Pokemon Go, I would have predicted something a lot more like this game, which is titled Pokemon Duel. So have you guys seen this or have you played it? Is probably the better question.
No,
I have not.
I saw the article when I was looking for something to talk about today.
How do you go this under the radar, especially when it's a game that's out in another portion of the world? Like, this is either a really well-kept secret or just really, really horrible advertising that this is so such a surprise release. It's essentially a board game. You get a roster of six pieces, which are Pokemon. And on your turn, you can, put the piece onto the board or move a piece that's on the board. And the objective is to get your piece to your opponent's goal before they can get their piece to your goal. And whenever a piece is next to each other, whenever two Pokemon are next to each other, they battle, which is essentially each one has a dial. Think of it like a pie chart with their different abilities.
It's like a game of Life Spinner, except the proportions of the outcomes can change. Like, feel like the angles will change.
Exactly, as you upgrade your Pokemon, and whoever gets the higher score on their spin wins, and some of them have special abilities and stuff like that. But it's as simple as that. It's a really kind of, it's a board game you can almost play on paper, save for the different sized spins when Pokemon battle, and it's a lot of fun. I think there's some strategic depth there, and I feel like I'm doing my grind segment here because I've been that's one of the games I've been playing, but really, really cool idea. In theory, really good on the phone, and just completely came out under the radar. So, it's cool to see this. I, you guys tell me how much you want to hear about it now versus in a couple minutes, because I'm going to be talking about it more.
I mean, go ahead and talk about it now if you would like, just so we can condense it.
Yeah,
because looking at this play, like when I hear, hey, this is more like a traditional Pokemon experience, I think about like choosing my moves and selecting which Pokemon to put up against other ones based on the type matching, and that only seems to be partially represented here because of the chance aspect of this, the deciding when certain moves will be deployed, and so it feels more like a deck builder thing almost.
Yeah, it's weird because they talk about the Pokemon that you have in your on your bench as your deck, and there's a deck of like ability cards that you can play, but there's no randomness to getting those. Like they are all available to you at all times. They're you don't draw them or anything. They're just there. Mm-hmm. And so the randomness really does come from what it's effectively a die roll to see whether or not you got your good ability, you got your worst ability, or you missed and you just automatically lose. So there's a high element of chance there. Although I imagine when you're playing with like really upgraded high level Pokemon, it's much more on the strategy side.
Yeah.
So the strategy right now comes a little bit more from when do I choose to engage and how can I make sure I'm initiating the engagement or the battle? Because you can choose to play those, booster cards. I don't know what to call them. Cause booster cards is a thing in Pokemon, enhancing cards. So like one adds 30 to all your attack values if you initiate the combat, or one allows you to spin again if you don't like the result of your spin, and if it's your turn, you can choose to play one of those cards before you initiate the battle, which gives you a leg up. Although it certainly doesn't guarantee anything because every Pokemon still has that chance to just flat out miss. Choosing, hey, I'm going to, I could take three, moves on the board, but I'm only going to take two because I know that means he's not going to be able to initiate a combat with me. And then when it comes back around to my turn, I'll have I've kind of locked out that part of the board, mm-hmm. and I'll have the chance to do what I want next turn. You can only place Pokemon from certain points on the board. So a big part of the start of the game is getting your Pokemon covering their entry points, because you can kind of limit their ability to put new Pokemon onto the board that way.
Hmm.
And so that's a nuance to it. The other nuance is if at any point you get a Pokemon on all sides of another player's monster, so there's one on either side or there's one on all three sides, basically you take away any exits, you automatically win that fight. So you can take out a potentially unbeatable Pokemon just by surrounding them.
Right.
Now, do they show a video of like a graphic Pokemon beatdown or anything like that?
No, there's more animation in it than there is in Pokemon Go, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But that's hard to do because to do that you have to get next to them, which means that there's going to be some kind of battle, or they at the very least are going to have the chance to initiate a battle with you. So there's a lot of strategy there, and it's got that kind of chess aspect where I'm moving here not because of, I want this spot itself, but I want the places that this spot covers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all kind of planning it out that way. And you can choose like the Pokemon. There are some that are able to move less spaces in a turn, but have much higher chances of succeeding in a combat. And then there's more mobile Pokemon that are pretty much guaranteed to fail if they actually get into a fight. And so there's a little bit of a dance of kind of getting your fast people in the right lane to get around and onto the enemy's base, without them being able to react or forcing kind of forks where if they move one way, they're going to lose one Pokemon. And if they move another, they're going to lose a different one. So
yeah,
there's some depth there. I'm worried that the game is going to have just an unbeatable paywall. There's a sign that pops up when you start the app every time that's like, you can play this completely for free, but there are net purchases. For reference, to buy the lowest tier of like expansion pack, it takes 50 gems, and for winning a game you get 3. And that's if you clear all like their challenges within the game. You get 3 gems.
Jeez.
Oh boy.
So the the big pack with the highest chance of getting good stuff is 500 gems.
Yeah, so they're gonna they're gonna roll up with some real Squaresoft style shit.
Yeah, like you're never gonna be able to be super competitive at this game without playing, which is a big miss because you know everyone knows I like Hearthstone a lot, and that's a game where, as someone who has invested very little money, I feel like I'm able to be competitive and don't feel like the game is screwing me out of a good experience. And because of that, I've invested money in the game. I actually, I think it was this week. Yeah, one of these nights, I just on impulse went and spent $5 in Hearthstone because like no good reason other than I felt like it and it built up the goodwill. So that, depending on how robust the single player option is, which I haven't seen yet, this game could kind of stall out on that aspect, but it's more Pokemon, so people would play it.
Nice. Yeah, I mean it sounds interesting. I'd be curious to see like to really lean into like team composition and stuff like that. Again, mm-hmm. I'm looking for those Pokemon hooks.
Especially because they're one of your abilities that you can have as a card swaps a Pokemon from your bench into the field or with one that's in the field. So you could theoretically like use one of your faster, weaker Pokemon to get into an advanced position and then use a turn to just swap in your bruiser that no one can take down. So I'm sure there's other cards like that I'm not necessarily aware of, but there is a little bit of that. Hey, I want to make sure, and you get to preview the team comp that you're going up against before you play, so you can kind of adjust yours and all that. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
Groovy.
Yeah. I don't know that I have any other questions about it. Like it's something I want to take a chance on. But yeah, I had no idea that this was a thing. Like, when did you find out about this? Because I've only just seen news articles about it today.
Yeah. Like at 3 today.
Yeah. Yeah. We all saw it at the same time then.
Well, I mean, there's a record. When did I post it in our Slack channel? Yeah, nice. 140 exactly.
Oh wow. Well, that sounds like a brief and a little bit of a grind to me.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. So let's see, Dennis, you posted this question. What did you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I asked them to be game designers. Essentially, you know, we've all got cool game ideas rolling around in the back of our heads. So I asked people to tell us about the game that they would create. If they suddenly had the time and talent.
Yay!
Yeah, and let's go ahead and get started here with Roop, who says, it would be a point-and-click adventure game. Themes of the game would go through all kinds of absurd and taboo subjects in the world. Let's say the player is an escaped mental patient, and he really thinks he is doing the good deeds and all, but throughout the game, you get glimpses of what you are really doing, hurting the innocent, etc. A mix of Gabriel Knight meets Harvester, meets Phantasmagoria 2, meets the Cat Lady. Graphical style would be close to a graphic novels. Yeah, those cool. good touch points, although Phantasmagoria 2 is a little silly.
I don't think I'm familiar with that one.
It's
idea that go ahead.
It's a Sierra like FMV adventure game.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. It's a little goofy, but it is it's a horror game.
Okay, cool. I like the idea that as you get glimpses of what's actually happening, you can find like the secret right answer to the adventure or that puzzle that seems to be wrong, but if you can use the real world logic that you get mm-hmm. glimpses to, you get like a better outcome.
Yeah. Ben, what does Josh say?
Josh says a VR RPG with physical pain induced by electrode for HP loss to encourage more conservative play. Naturally, permadeath would be included.
I like that he also has a little smiley face at the end of this. Mm-hmm.
Can't tell if it's a joke smiley or a evil smiley.
yeah, no, it just all that it has is just a little box you put on top of the VR helmet or whatever, and if you fuck up, it just releases a single bullet ant. You know, to correct you.
Brings a whole new meaning to the phrase kill screen.
I guess. By which you mean I killed my screen by ripping the helmet off and throwing it at the wall.
Or the screen killed me.
There we go. Yeah, I can't imagine the disclaimers you would have to do, because this would stop somebody's heart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jello, what does Baharath say?
He says, a black and white version of Batman similar to the Wii game Mad World, where it's grittier. The first half of the game, Batman heavily relies on his gadgets and friends, but during the second half, he's completely stripped down of technology, but still has to figure out puzzles and stuff. We'll get to see what makes Batman, Batman.
That sounds like something the Joker would say.
We'll get to see.
all these have been really dark so far.
Well, I cannot believe that one of the Batman games has not done the Batman stripped of his powers thing yet. Is that really not a thing?
I mean, there's that one scene in Arkham City that introduces you to combat without all of the I'm avoiding specifics, even though the game came out 6 years ago. It's at the beginning. Like there's a scene in Arkham City where you are Bruce Wayne being admitted to the prison in Arkham City.
Oh, right. Yeah, right. That's right at the start. I completely forgot.
Yeah,
about that.
It's your combat tutorial where you're just fighting as Bruce Wayne
for all of 2 minutes of the game.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, of course. Dennis, what does Raghavan say?
Yeah, he says, this one is a long-held dream. I've always wanted a proper action-adventure game based on anime, particularly Inuyasha. A feudal Japan world, excellent soundtrack with mythical demons, an overarching quest for magic jewel and personal identity, multiple boss story arcs, and epic ability upgrades would have made excellent material for a game. I'm curious about the ability upgrades. That's the one thing that feels out of place in that list. Not for a game, but for an anime.
I don't know.
Come on, they power up in anime. That's the thing that
they spend whole episodes powering up.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Inuyasha is a good world, though, so that's a fun idea.
Yeah.
Of course, like most anime games, usually are just like crappy. So you know. Yeah.
I never. Inuyasha was the one that I watched. I think that was one that was like opposite of things that I liked on Toonami. Okay.
Well, see, when Inuyasha was first released as comics, and Viz serialized it as individual issues of comic books, I had a subscription to it. And it was coming out in America at the same time that it was coming out in Japan. So I read at least a chunk of the beginning of Inuyasha anyway, as it was coming out. Mm. And I haven't like watched or read all of it, but you know, it was a thing back when I was a little one, when it was first coming out, that I did pay attention to then.
Hmm. Let's see. Jason writes, Star Fox 64 was one of the games that I got the most out of on the Nintendo 64, being able to replay it, taking branching paths throughout the system to see different worlds different worlds. Considering I've never really seen another game like it, I'd enjoy creating something similar if I only had the capabilities. Also, even though your team in Star Fox is made up of bumbling inept frogs and jerk falcons, the banter they all have is a major source of fun, and it would be a big benefit in such a game. So doing an update of Star Fox, sticking more to the 64 and not that weird Platinum one that came out.
Yeah. What is it about like flight combat banter that makes it just the coolest thing in the world?
I don't know. I think that it's pulled, like, it's mostly because it's pulled from really cool movies, like those ideas.
Yeah.
Except like you say that, and then the first thing that comes to my mind is Sewer Shark, which is not exactly
Wait a minute, what do you mean?
Not exactly awesome and not exactly like a flight thing, but
what do you mean? Sewer Shark isn't cool?
No.
Oh, I need to rethink a lot of things now.
It's good, sharp. But there's better.
Ben, what does Sam say?
Sam says, an RPG about modern-day wizards, more Shadowrun than D&D, that get powers by taking quote-unquote research chemicals from the internet. Sometimes I have dreams where I play video games, and that's the most coherent one.
So I'm here in a Doctor Strange video game.
Right?
Yeah. Ah, man, Shadowrun. Jalo, what does James say?
James says, I've always wanted to make an SNES-style 16-bit RPG with Zelda combat where every decision you make matters, with a time system that means where you are and what you do there matters. The game would be alive and have a world that exists outside the player's direct influence, and you're just a character along for the ride, able to influence it towards multiple endings.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, like that is also something that might be achievable with RPG Maker and all those tools that are available for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of these days I just have to go buy RPG Maker. It goes on sale
pretty often, actually.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those things I got to pull that trigger, and I'm sure that will be in a time hole that I fall down pretty hard. I do too much thinking about this stuff to not have it happen.
Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, what does Eric say?
Yeah, Eric says an open world supernatural game, and that's capital S Supernatural, the TV series, where you get leads on monsters and have to disguise yourself as law enforcement and bring a limited inventory of the various items throughout the show to hunt the monsters, like an LA noir for monster hunting. Your stuff is in the back of the Impala, so it's never too far off, but you can only bring a few things on foot. I like this idea a lot. The idea that kind of the research phase informs what you pack, and then what you pack informs how hard or easy it is to deal with what you actually find.
Sounds like Witcher to me, actually, like Witcher 3.
Just
the idea that doing research on the monsters and figuring out how to prepare for the fight has a huge impact on. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but as a supernatural, fan game, it has to have them fall in love with each other.
Of course.
Which is super weird because it's two brothers, but, whatever.
That's never stopped anybody. Man, this stripe of supernatural fandom through our community is very bizarre to me. The fact that Jeremy Greer and Stephen Vayu are doing that Supernatural fan cast, it's just strange because when I think of Supernatural, I think of my little sister who like really really enjoys that show and has like gone to cons and stuff and like it's just a strange context.
Like six seasons of it.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Jenna and I got into it. And watched, I don't know how many seasons there are now, but it definitely, like, the first season is just incredibly strong. Hmm. I think the second season is pretty good as well. But then they hit that kind of, well, we've decided we're going to make this show run forever, so there's always going to be a MacGuffin that's out of reach, and, the big bad last time is not the big bad that you thought it was, because we've invented a new big bad so we can have three more seasons.
Yeah, yeah. I think they just picked up the 13th season. I'm just repeating this phonetically. So,
here, fun fact about David is I watched some of it with him because Jen got like further ahead. She found it first, and then I watched a bunch to catch up with David. And he always knew what it like. They the first season they do a really good job kind of picking obscure supernatural monsters from like Native American lore or just really random things to kind of keep you confused about what was actually going on. Mm-hmm. And David knew every single time. They'd be like, oh, see that's salt on the ground, that means it's this, or oh, they said it smells like blueberries, that's this kind of monster.
David's a real life witcher.
He's a real life witcher.
Yep. No, that comports with my knowledge of him. That was always the strangest thing in Academic Challenge, because we were on Academic Challenge together, that I think I'm hot shit when it comes to that stuff, but he is on that trigger buzzing in and talking about Wendigos and shit. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Supernatural has gotten to the point though, just in its arc, that I would be very surprised if they haven't done a musical episode.
Oh yeah, yeah. They've passed the Buffy mark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Michael writes, a restaurant management sim where it takes mechanical cues from defend the house from zombie segments and other games. First part of the loop would be bolstering your preparation or team to prepare for the rush, then hang on desperately to try weathering the storm of the dinner crowd. It would wrap up with picking up the pieces afterwards, fixing broken equipment and people, etc. Don't forget all of the drinking and smoking.
Yeah, right.
I'm picturing. Did you guys
like this a lot?
Did you guys ever play a game on mobile? I think it was like Flight Plan or something like that.
No, sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's a man. There might be something. There was a nautical version as well. That was like Harbor Master or something like that. But the idea is you are air traffic control. It's a top-down view of like the area around an airport, and you have to guide the airports into the correct runways by drawing a little path for them. And the
whole airport, that's got to be so hard to do.
Well, I mean, it starts out incredibly simple, you know, with like one or two, but then eventually it throws so many at you that you have to be very, very careful with how you draw those paths in, because if they collide, then you're fucked. This was a very early iOS game. I would picture having something like that on the order of like moving the staff around and like just trying to keep those plates spinning.
You'd fail unless you were playing the Breaking Bad edition.
What?
Nothing.
Oh, I get it now. Yeah. I try to forget that happened, actually. that is not a good plot point in that show.
My question is, why does it only have to take mechanical cues from the zombie games? I think this should be a restaurant for zombies, and that's why they're so messy.
Yeah. Oh, they just don't know any better. Ben, what does John say?
John says, I had an idea for a mobile techno horror text adventure game. It would start as a conversation with an experimental AI bot that would learn as you talked with them. At some point, it would begin stalking you outside of the game. Robo-calling your phone, sending you emails, basically turning the game into an ARG. At that point, the goal would be to convince the AI to leave you alone or self-destruct. I'm not sure if the self-destruct is referring to the AI or the person in that situation.
Again, don't forget the drinking and smoking. yeah.
That's good.
It's, oh gosh, Majestic. That was the game that EA did, right? That was like the ARG. Like that was such a weird kind of, like it was a weird time for that, because there would have realistically been multiple ways they could have gotten at you. Like you would give it your phone numbers, or you would give it like a fax number, your IM accounts, just basically any way to contact you. And then characters from inside the game world would, you know, reach out. And it was just kind of this game that would run even while you were in your real life. But now for everybody, it would just be the same cell phone number and the same email address. Like there is no there is no heterogeneity with any of the communication methods that we all have.
Interesting. Yeah. It all goes to your phone.
Yeah. It's the same thing. Yeah. I would say, I forget what it is, but there's an iOS game where, it's like a text based game where it sends you prompts and you're trying to, it's almost like you are on the other end of the Martian. And you are trying to have this person survive, but it's in real time. So you'll get a bloop and say like, hey, should I use this wrench or that wrench? Or, you know, should I ration my water, or should I drink it up? Stuff like that. I need to look up and see what
keep
that
texting
is.
Texting and no one explodes.
Maybe. Jala, what does Graham say?
Graham says, the world of historical fantasy tactical RPGs is untapped. How about a tactical RPG about the ancient Phrygians? You'll fight armies, animals, and even mythological creatures. The soundtrack is 70s-inspired progressive rock and prog metal for some reason.
Well, you know, because you would like it to be that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the reason. The game I was referring to before is called Lifeline. Sorry, I needed to figure that out. Otherwise, I would lose my mind. Yeah. No, I don't know who the Phrygians are. I know the Phrygian scale. You know, in
what's
in
the Phrygian scale?
It's music. It's
okay.
Yeah, but Let's see, Dennis. What does Jeremy say?
Oh, no, it works out well that I landed on this one. A modern XCOM-style game using the Cthulhu mythos set during the 1920s or 1930s. The equation for this game is simple. Commanding a soldier with a 75% chance to hit a deep one, plus researching non-Euclidean geometry at my 1920s underground base, equals me being able to die happy. I like that idea that you can... to make room in your base, you can just kind of break the laws of physics.
Oh gosh, it'd be a little bit like Final Fantasy Tactics has the calculators that use basically the stats and levels and certain aspects of the map, like height, against everybody. Like your Eldritch investigators would be able to use the math of the game and break it against people.
Yeah, I mean, it's not one-to-one, but Darkest Dungeon is kind of this. Hmm. So, Jeremy, if you haven't checked it out already, Darkest Dungeon might scratch this itch.
Yeah, the Cove is definitely pretty close to Cthulhu-esque.
Yeah. So that's probably all we're going to have time to get through on this, just in the interest of keeping things moving along, because I don't know if you can tell, I'm not feeling good, and I know that Jal isn't feeling good either. But we should probably go through ours. For me, you know, it's one of those things. I don't have an awful lot of ideas for this. I spend most of my time playing and consuming and thinking about them, as opposed to thinking about creating them, because I just know I don't have the skills to do it.
You'd make Dark Souls 3 good.
Yeah, probably not. I don't need people being angrier at me about that. No, what I would love is a pursuit-based survival horror game that was kind of set in like the mid to late 90s or something like that, and took a lot of cues from like Junji Ito, like the like Uzumaki, or you know, some of the weirder stuff. I'm just reading a lot of Junji Ito recently, so you know, that's probably why this is popping into my head. What's that?
No, just that's probably why it's coming up.
That's why I say it. But it's kind of like, oh, like, you know, just let's lean into this, you know, body horror type thing. And, you know, maybe some weird stuff is happening to you, and that's giving you certain powers you can use to evade. And that's generating all these monsters and stuff.
What are his hallmarks for someone who's not familiar with that?
It's incredibly gory. And it leans a lot on body horror and like a different culture's interpretation of like Lovecraftian themes. You know, demons that rest beyond and just outside of our sight or inhabit certain objects in particular ways. He's really good. Like, I've, you know, fallen back into a hole with him. We covered Uzumaki on Bonfire Side Chat because because his work informs a lot of that. And if you're thinking, hey, Cole, this would have been a thing in Silent Hills, then yes. Yeah, I would like to make Silent Hills or take PT and expand it out, because Junji Ito was going to do character design work on that game, and every day my heart is broken because we don't live in that world. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
So I think I'm going to lean on the like unlimited budget and talent thing, and I would probably go to like Obsidian and BioWare and make another Star Wars Knights of the Republic game, but make it like a 200-hour game.
Make it a game that only you would have the patience for.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, anything like in addition to that, like would it just expand after Coder 2, or is it just
I don't care. I would just hire both those studios and just say, work, take all the time you need. Let's do this.
Yeah. Awesome. Jala, how
like
about you?
Idea that, oh, whoop, that you've got a production house, Ben, that just like while you're at work builds you a new level of this game, and you get to come home and play it, and you're like, it's a good one, guys. See you tomorrow.
Keep it up.
They never have to finish it. They just have to stay like a couple of play sessions ahead of you.
Yeah, like Supernatural.
You're just going to. You've basically described the idea like, oh, what if Synecdoche, New York was about game development?
It's like the Wallace and Gromit scene where they're laying the track in front of the train as they're going on it.
Yeah. Jala, how about you?
Well, I think I had covered this at some point before. At least I have talked about it off and on whenever it occurs to me to talk about it. I would do an adventure slash fighting game crossover where you have dissociative identity disorder and your personalities are fighting for each other for dominance, and the adventure game portion changes according to what personality is in control. This is kind of weird how it all came up in the first place, like, you know, what conversation sparked this idea, but anyway, I kind of see this as being a thing where you're like in an old school asylum, and the object of the game would be to figure out as much as you can about yourself and why you're in there, what happened to cause your dissociative identity disorder and whatnot, because it's usually some kind of, you know, major traumatic life event that does it. Though, depending upon what personality is in charge, the direction that they will want to take, you know, in the game, like, you know, how they want to approach everything changes depending upon who's in control. And, like, say, for example, if you were to see your doctor's notes about, you know, like, your medication and how you respond to it, if you were, being controlled by the paranoid personality or something, then they would see it as, like, oh, they're experiencing, you know, they would read it and think that they're, you know, notes about the doctor's evil plans to experiment on them and whatever, and maybe the camera would just, like, wrench away from you and start looking around, you know, like, super paranoid or whatever. You know, like, it would move differently, it would look different depending upon which personality, you know, was in control. So maybe, you know, one personality might want to take over the asylum and experiment on the doctors. Somebody else might just want to leave and just live a life peacefully alone somewhere. Mm-hmm. Somebody else might want to just, you know, be a good patient and, you know, the doctor knows best and go sit back in their cell and be obedient and quiet and whatever. And, you know, like, everything would be different. That's the variety and the idea that, like, even during the fighting game portions of it, when your personalities are fighting, you may want to lose, you know, if you're in control of one personality, you may want to lose and let a different personality take over because they see things in a different way that you want to see, or they have abilities or knowledge that, you know, the current personality doesn't have, but it's not really like a losing condition. It's just changing how the game plays.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be an absolute nightmare to try to actually make because it would be such a resource slog. You would have to redo the script and all of the assets and everything, the voices, the mechanics of how the character does stuff, depending upon which one is, you know, which personality is in control. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the ending, like, it would just be like a big, big mess of a thing to try to make. But yeah. It would be super fun, super fun. It's very much the kind of thing that I would have a lot of interest in playing because, mm-hmm. you know, that's my kind of jam. But
yeah, you're almost like describing almost like a Shenmue kind of thing. It seems like it'd be really cool if it was like Way of the Samurai or something, like very, very, very short, but very dense and like meant to explore all of the kind of paths that you can take through it.
Mm-hmm.
And see how stuff shifts around.
Well, especially since I'm the exploring type, and I like to see all the different options and what will the game let me do, you know, like seeing, you know, the psychology behind it as each of these different characters, you know, is completely like inhabiting a completely different world, you know, like each of the, you know, ways that they would move, ways they would talk, ways they would interpret things. It would just be very, very different, and that's interesting to me. It would be one person, just multiple personalities. So
yeah.
Reminds me of a more tense version of like GTA 5, like how each of the three characters have different like skill emphases. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Your idea sounds much better.
Well, I mean, it mixes up my love of exploration with random stuff like fighting games, and then, you know, psychology and people, because I'm very interested in people as a general rule, and, you know, also horror. Like, you're in an asylum, you got crazy stuff going on, you are struggling with this identity disorder, you know, and you know, like, you eventually, even if you are really good, you're going to want whatever your current personality is. Like, say, for example, in the fighting game part, if you are, you know, like, the paranoid personality, and you know, you go through a fight, you don't get healed or anything, so eventually you're going to lose a fight, and then, you know, like by the nature of how it would play out, you would have to switch at some point, even if you're really good at playing the game. So
that makes me think of there's a tabletop RPG called I Am John. And it's very much the same idea that the, you know, the story that you play is all around one character, but each person plays a different personality in the character's head. And if the person gets to drive, they get to control John. But every time they do anything that takes effort, they have to like take a chance that they will lose control. So it's like any, you know, whatever you want to do is, you know, directly proportional to how much you're willing to risk losing control.
Yeah, well, dissociative identity disorder is basically fits where, you know, a personality's change happens, usually occur when there's some kind of a, you know, a trauma, some kind of stressor or something. But like if you are in an asylum and trying to figure out stuff and, you know, things start happening around you, then, yeah, I mean, you're going to have stuff come up that would trigger these fight scenes or whatever that would go through. And maybe it wouldn't end up being like a fighting game style, because, I mean, like I would want the game to flow and not be a little bit, you know, not too jerky with that kind of thing. But that's just the idea that I came up with just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, this, I think I came up with this one on a free play question for a long time ago, but I really like the idea of a video game about having a disability where you are a young video game character who's going off to video game school for the first time. And you go in and everyone picks up their power up, but you're not able to use power ups. Like you, for whatever reason, just can't. And like the, you know, platformer portion of it would be like, think about now there's a level that's gone from being a platformer to a puzzle game because the entire thing is, designed around double jump and you have to figure out how to get through it without being able to use double jump. Or there's, you know, an entire level designed around being able to use, you know, a shield or, you know, pick your power. But you're not able to do any of those things. So you have to figure out your way through it without being able to leverage what the level is seemingly designed for. And then on the story side of it, it would be about kind of dealing with that and becoming, you know, maybe made fun of or picked on by certain kids because you aren't able to use power-ups. And then gradually as you like, you know, win friends over and reconcile those situations, you might be able to then bring friends into the level to help you, so that you eventually can get somewhere close to the target times, which of course at the beginning would be completely out of reach. But you know, you use the people around you and kind of get help from friends to be able to actually do this stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be an awesome game.
Specifically playing around with disempowerment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that sounds really cool. And thank you everybody for writing in with your ideas. We're going to take them and publish them and that's about the end of it. But if you want to give us more IP in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast on Tuesday afternoons and you can see those popping up thanks to either Dennis or Jala who post those. Yeah.
Hey.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing. Dennis, since you did the Pokemon, what is that? Duel. Yeah, but I said Pokemon Charge, which I'm sure is a thing. Since you did Pokemon Duel during the brief, why don't we get you finished up? What else have you been playing?
Yeah, the other thing, I think I talked about it two episodes ago, at least episodes that I've been on, and I've continued to get a ton of fun out of it, is a game called Forced Showdown. This is the kind of arena brawler, twin stick arena brawler with card game mechanics to it, if you guys remember. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it just continues to be so much fun. Like I talked the first time about how it kind of uses randomness really well. And I appreciate that. I'm also starting to feel like I'm getting a good sense of the game's unique style for deck building. Like, I'm starting to learn the language of, I probably want to have this much card draw in my deck versus, you know, pure upgrades, and like feeling like I'm getting a better handle on the synergies, which just leads to having more fun playing the game. Because, man, when you know, a plan comes perfectly together and you draw, you know, you get the god draw, exactly what you were hoping to get, it just feels so good. And then the gameplay reward behind that, of just feeling like a god and you know, tearing apart an arena like it was nothing, just reinforces that really well. So it's like, ah, yes, I got the perfect draw, and now I get to have like so much more fun, not more mm-hmm. fun, but like just feel so empowered because of that, that the two of those complement each other really, really well.
Yeah.
So I've been messing around with that. I don't know why, but for the first probably 2 weeks when I had the game, there was a season mode, where it had kind of random daily quests, that it wouldn't log into it. And so finally, it logged in, and I've been messing around with those a little bit. It's really interesting what they have there. So there's one where it's just like a shared seed, and anyone can bring any deck and hero and whatever to that, and just see how far they can get on that seed.
If this was a different show, I would remark on how funny the word shared seed is. Yeah, just again, for anybody who's expecting this to be abject suffering, we're just, you know, it's a different kind of deal we got going on here. Continue, Dennis. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we are a little more sperm averse here, but we can. Do you want to? Like, I feel like. No, it's
fine. We're not classy. So we're just sperm averse.
Yeah. Oh God. So yeah, there's a version where you can bring any hero and deck combination to it. And then there's one where everything is fixed. So the deck is fixed, the hero is fixed, and the arenas are fixed. And then there's a version of that you only get one try at. And so that's been a lot of fun to mess around with, and see how I can get. I don't know how many people are playing the game, because I showed up as number 15 in the rankings after one run, which either I'm really like, I didn't finish the arena. So I got pretty far into it, but I didn't finish it. So either there was just kind of a glitch and it wasn't loading everything right, or it's a pretty small base of players, at least playing the, you know, the season stuff regularly. Which makes me sad, because this game is so, so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to hope that it's not some kind of like Last Starfighter situation where you're going to be like conscripted into some kind of horrible battle because of your skills or showdown.
That's my goal. I would, okay. I'd really right. love it if that happened.
That's why you play games. Yeah. Hashtag why I game.
Oh, man. Yeah, so the one complaint I have, and I've literally put, I think it's 37 hours into this game now, so that's getting up there, and in a relatively, like, I've only had it for a month, so that's a good amount of time.
Yeah,
it's no Allison numbers, let me be clear, but it's a pretty good dedication. is that there, you unlock certain things by doing quests, and some of the quests get really obscure, where it's like, hey, play, you know, in the game, play a 1-cost card, a 2-cost card, then a 3-cost card, then a 4-cost card, all the way up through 8. So like curve out perfectly with 1 card a turn. For a game. So one, you have to, you know, build a deck that's capable of doing that, and then actually survive long enough using it to have that be worthwhile. And then that's like one of 4 different quests that you have to do to actually unlock the next thing. And so that feels a little frustrating. On the one hand, I see what they were trying to do. They're trying to encourage people to be creative with the deck types and kind of get into maybe some more obscure stuff or just kind of have their own unique challenge mode. At the same time, like, there's a whole hero, there's a whole character that I have not unlocked yet, I think because I haven't done enough quests. So it feels like some of the gating that they do based on the quests is way too hard. So that's a little bit frustrating, but overall the game is just a joy to play, and I'm fairly confident it's going to be the game that I will stream come Duck Spring.
Nice.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to I need to decide what I'm going to stream, actually. I have no idea. Yeah.
Well, it can't be Force Showdown. That's mine.
That's
mine.
Yours. I don't want to cramp your style, Dad.
I was requested to play a specific game, so we'll see how that works out.
Did it rhyme with Schmevin and Schmeasel?
Huh.
Does anything rhyme with that?
No, that doesn't. That's not a word. That was nonsense. The thing you just said.
Yeah. You know, on reflection, look, guys. Nobody bats 1,000.
So Force Showdown.
On saying actual words.
Right. What else is Force Showdown?
Force Showdown, Pokemon Duel. I've been grinding away at Dark Souls 3, but nothing new to report on that. I think I'll wait until I've actually beat the game to give further commentary.
Where are
you
at?
I'm closing in. I was just playing it earlier today. So there's a cathedral that you visit really early that has like a ladder at the back that you can't get to.
Right.
And you've got there's the place with two dragons together.
Yeah. So you're in Lothric Castle.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just opened up the gate behind the two dragons.
Yeah. Yeah. You're in the last third.
I knew I was when I got the Phoenix Feather equivalent for this game.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like for the three people who don't play Dark Souls, throughout the game, there's a consumable item that allows you to return to a bonfire called a Homeward Bone. But you use it when you use it. And eventually the game gives you a version of that that just has infinite uses versus having to manage your inventory of it. But I had 14 of them anyway, so I guess I'm just a badass. No, it's just that signaled more than giving me a mechanical advantage, that just signaled to me that the end of the game was near.
Yeah. That's been a thing since, since even Dark Souls 2.
Yep.
Nice. Jala.
Okay. So, the first thing is that I did some co-op again, finally. I know it's been like forever since I've done that because stuff and things, but I played Robot Roller Derby Disco Dodgeball with Sam. I had been wanting to play that game again. And then actually, it wasn't me that brought it up. Sam was like, hey, I kind of wanted to play that game. And I'm like, awesome. I kind of wanted to play that game too. But we kind of want to get like more people in on it, because although we can go into a public room with a bunch of random people and that's okay, it's a lot more fun if you have people that you know and you have like several people, at least 4 or 5 people in there. But so anyway, at some point, if I can round up enough people, we will probably have like an evening of Robot Roller Derby Disco Dodgeball.
Hmm.
So
what's the gameplay like?
I guess you haven't. Well, it's been a while since the last time I talked about this. This is the one that is an arena FPS, which I'm not very good at, by the way, but I never played arena FPSs growing up. It basically is kind of like, imagine Rosie the Robot from the Jetsons going to a club, like flashy lights on the walls and stuff, and like pegging each other with balls. And that's about what Robot Roller Derby Disco Dodgeball is like.
Wow, you just described the black velvet painting that I have on my living room wall.
Yeah, that would be a thing. So, yeah, it's really fun. And the music from it is, you know, pretty simple, pretty catchy, and it is in my running playlist. I listen to it when I run sometimes. So anyway, that's the thing. I can't really say too much about it. I popped in with him and, you know, we had some fun playing with randos and everything, but kind of wanted to go back again when we had more people together. So maybe after I'm done with PAX and everything, I can try to organize something for that.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. Let's see. I'm going to camp out on one of them for a little bit longer, so I'm going to mention the one that I'm not going to talk as much about first. Dishonored 2. I finished it. I was on in the middle of Mission 8, and now I am done. Nothing during the endgame was particularly more awesome to me than Missions 4 and 7.
Yeah.
And that's what I was thinking was going to happen when you and I were talking about it last time, Cole. I like the final mission as an end cap to how the game began, but narratively it was so predictable and just not particularly fun to play. It wasn't particularly bad, but it wasn't particularly fun either. So it was just kind of like there, and it was just there, and it was okay. The ending on Low Chaos Mode was just way happier than what I've come to expect or want out of this series. And I mean, that's been a running thing. This whole game seems a lot more hopeful than the first game did. And it just, I don't know. I kind of wished that it had the same kind of narrative theming that the first game did. And it just didn't have that the same way in this game. Like, it, they wanted to have the nests of blood flies and abandoned apartments and all of the rundown stuff, but then somehow there's hope and sunshine and rainbows and stuff, and I'm like, wait, so overall, my kind of impression of this game after having finished it is that there were some really high highs that were just awesome to play with new mechanics and challenges. And these highs made the average parts of the game, that is the most of the rest of it, seem less interesting than if it was overall average without the high points.
Yeah.
Like, if it didn't have the high points, then everything else wouldn't look as blah, you know, but you know, with all the with the high points being as cool as they were, you know, it just kind of like made the rest of it settle down lower than otherwise. So I still want to play through High Chaos with Corvo, but I need a break from it for a while first.
That's where I landed as well. It might even like make sure that you try out New Game Plus, because they patched that in. You can play as Corvo and you can mix and match the powers. So
cool. And then also, in retrospect, and this is something that I came up when I was in the Watch Out for Fireballs channel talking about it a little bit, that my favorite character and set piece was Kieran Jindosh and anything related to him. The aspects of the game affected by him were more interesting overall than like anything else. Definitely more interesting than Delilah.
Of course.
More interesting than a lot of like other stuff completely. And I took a non-lethal takedown approach for him because I was on a low chaos run. But then I came across his Jindosh lock, and that was like a post-takedown fuck you. But the thing is that like I spent a good 45 minutes trying to figure out the puzzle and got part of the way there, but then ended up just not wanting to invest any more time in it. But I did that after I had already gone through and cleared the rest of the level. So
had the answer.
I was just like, you know, putzing around because I explore everything. So it takes so long to get through these things because I'm just everywhere. And like I've said before on both games, I have a tendency of, even if I go one way, I will backtrack before I finish out the level and go the other way just to see what I missed. So, you know, that was part of it, was I was kind of curious. I was like, I wonder if I can do this thing. And I spent like 45 minutes and I'm like, never mind, I don't want to deal with this. So that was pretty cool. That was like a nice, you know, post takedown fuck you from Kieran Jindosh. So that was pretty cool. And especially like in the ending parts of the game where you come across his creation some more and you just hear his voice a little bit. It's still kind of like, you know, he was pretty cool. Yeah. He was probably the most interesting character in this particular game
this,
for me.
For context for people, Kieran Jindosh is this kind of not wacky but eccentric inventor kind of guy. A little bit of a counterpart to Sokolov, the inventor in the first game. But this guy is way more amoral. And when we're talking about his creations, we're specifically talking about these mechanical soldiers. Instead of having digitized voices that say like, oh, target detected, going after him, blah blah blah, it is just these absent-minded recordings of Jindosh, like saying, "Okay, this is what he will say when he sees something. This is the message for ceasing combat operations." It's like it's just like little tape loops of voice memos that are playing out as you know this thing that is made entirely of blades is coming at you.
Yeah, and it's pretty awesome. And I took to like rewiring those. Like when I first came across them, I was just like, nope, I'm a grenade all of these suckers because I'm not getting close to them. But then I decided that I was going to jump down, like surprise them and then rewire them once I figured out where the rewiring panel was.
Yeah.
And that was quite a lot of fun. I like to rewire those guys. It's chaotic.
Yeah.
I for the low chaos run, I made piles of bodies everywhere. I was like causing deaths, you know, via other ways that are not direct, you know. and so like I caused a lot of chaos for having a quote low chaos run. So
nice.
But anyway, so I did that. It wasn't bad, but again, like I just kind of want to go back and just play those really cool parts and then just the rest of it. You know, like play all the rest of it separate from the really cool parts, because having the really high parts in the middle of the lower, you know, average parts just kind of drags down the other part, like the yeah. less cool parts. Like
it distracts from their yeah. quality.
Yeah, they just it just needs to be separated, in my opinion. Just
yeah.
Okay. So the last thing that I did was I played the Resident Evil 7 demo. You know, I cannot at this point in time, given things going on in my life, purchase the game, as discussed previously. Mm-hmm. But I did play the damn demo. So I played this while Sam was on a video call with me on Skype, and I didn't really want to stream it. I wanted to have direct interaction with Sam because this was like right after we finished Robot Roller Derby Disco Dodgeball, and we were still just kind of hanging out. And so I was like, hey, you know, and then I was like, oh yeah, I have that demo. Let me play it. Depending on how you roll, and I'm not really sure where Sam is on this scale, I'm either an absolute nightmare to watch when playing horror games, or I'm really fun to watch.
Okay.
Because I'm not generally perturbed by the things meant to scare me, and I'm usually interested in poking around and examining everything beyond what most people bother with. So, like, you know, guy comes around the corner, and it's supposed to be all scary and shit, and I'm just like, oh, there's the guy. Okay, whatever. And then I'm, like, looking at something else on the wall, you know? It's just whatever. I was texting Dennis a little bit yesterday, and he was like, I've heard of the horror of the mundane, but you're exploring the mundane of the horror. Yeah. Because I spent this inordinate amount of time looking at the voodoo dolls hanging from the ceiling just to try to figure out what they were made out of. And I was laughing at the trash bag in the oven and the crow in the microwave and the bike upside down in the literal bloodbath. I mean, those things were very, very funny to me.
Well, of course.
Yeah. I spent all this time looking at the carcass by the back door trying to figure out what it was. You know, so I have a lot more fun looking at the scenery. I was making fun of the photo. I'm like, oh, that guy doesn't look creepy, you know? It also made me, like, when Dennis said that, it made me think about how in Half-Life 2 there are those monsters that drop from the ceiling and grab you and eat you, right?
Yep.
But I saw a bottle of bleach in the ambient scenery, and I really wanted to feed it to the monster, but the game wouldn't let me do it, and I was so mad because I wanted to feed it bleach.
Oh, yeah? You're talking about Half-Life 2.
Yeah, Half-Life 2. Yeah, I said that.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure because it made it sound like you were talking about doing this in Resident Evil 7. I'm like, that demo was entirely nonviolent.
Was it? They actually have a gun in there.
Oh, I also haven't played. I haven't played it since they updated it. I only played the one they released last fall.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so that just reminded me of that. That's another instance of Jala, you know, wanting to do stuff that the game won't let me do. But anyway, I found the monster, which is something you didn't get to see, Cole, because you played it before they had the monster.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's going to be pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But a lot of, like, I've seen some articles where they were like, oh, you know, this is closer to the original Resident Evil feel. No, the original Resident Evil was cheesy as hell. This is a new direction. this is not the same thing. These two things are not the same thing. But anyway, so yeah. Right now, I cannot shell out the money for it, but I will continue to have it on my wish list until such a time as Capcom makes it some kind of price that I can afford.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I imagine it'll go on sale here pretty quick. Capcom keeps her stuff expensive at the start, but then they go, you know, they have sales pretty frequently.
So I had fun with that, and that's about it. And Sam was watching me play it and, you know, watching me have no reaction when it was on the screen, and I'm just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, you weren't playing it up like a streamer screaming for no reason.
What's funny is when I was streaming BioShock and they had a couple of jump scares in there, I was just like, oh, I guess that was supposed to be scary, blam, blam. And then other people watching it were scared, but, you know, and they were like, I jumped. And meanwhile, I just have no reaction. And I'm just like, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just me. That's just me. You know it's creepy if I actually jump at the game. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm at the opposite of the spectrum where everything is terrifying if I play like a Dead Space game. My voice just broke because I was just scared of that game.
Just even saying it, it's like Bloody Mary. Like, oh gosh, I'm going to invoke it. It's going to come after me. Yeah. So for both of those, I mean, we're both kind of on the same track a little bit. I'll be talking about Resident Evil 7 next time. Because I have it and I'm very motivated to play through it on my own here. Then I'll probably do a stream of it, you know, just to get those eyeballs. But also we didn't get a chance when we were talking about Dishonored 2. We have like a massive like 3.5 hour episode of Watch Out for Fireballs that came out the day before this episode comes out. That people can check out if they're curious. Our thoughts line up with yours a lot, although it is a very mechanically satisfying game, even outside of those incredible highlights.
Yeah, it is. And I, you know, I'm not gonna, you know, besmirch the game about that. The mechanics are definitely solid and improved upon from the first game, which, you know, that's what you want with a sequel. You don't want it to drop down and be crappier. So,
yeah,
you know. Yeah.
Yep. I'm down for it. Ben, how about you?
All right.
Jala, I'm sorry. Did you have anything else?
Nope.
Okay.
Ben. So, first thing, get out of the way early. Played Rocket League this week, so no surprise. I have surpassed the 400 hour mark on the game.
Holy shit. Is that the most you've played a game?
On Steam, yeah, but I've only had Steam for like a year and a half or so. So might not be the best. I haven't timed all of my games on console or anything that. So
when did you get Rocket League? How many months?
A year and a few months ago. So about as long as I've had Steam.
Okay.
Hour a day, you know, it's like exercise, but not good for you physically. But the other thing that I played, I finished Doom this last week, and I ended up beating that. So I was pretty happy with that game, I think, overall. I think it's a good game. It's not, like, a great game. Like, I don't even know if it would make, like, top three of 2016, but, I mean, it's definitely fun to play. It's definitely good for getting out aggression. Mm-hmm. I don't like heavy metal music, but I like the music of this game. So basically, most of the reviews are kind of ring true about it. It's interesting, like, the game just rewards you by giving you more things to shoot. It's just like a, I don't know, it's a very weird system, but it's just fun. There's not really a deep storyline. There's minimal number of characters. That's fine. There didn't really need to be a whole lot there. There's maybe one or two puzzle sections of the game, and I'm using that term very loosely, but for the most part, you're just shooting stuff and you just build up your guns and you use the ones that you like to use. I don't know. I'll probably talk more about it when you play it, Cole, and then we can kind of go into more depth about it. But it's a great aesthetic and it's not a great game, but it's really fun to play. So
yeah, I feel like I've asked you the obvious questions about this. Like, did you have a lot of experience, or did you have any experience playing the original Doom back in the day, or is it more just kind of like you played stuff that came after it? Like, you know,
I remember playing Doom when I was a kid, but like I don't think I ever beat it like from start to completion. And I was pretty young when I played it, so I don't think I was really good at video games at that point in time. So yeah. I remember one time I played it with it was like a family friend or something like that, and he turned the cheat on where you could walk through walls, and then he turned it off after I got to an area where you're just stuck and then
dick
just hanging out in a courtyard for a while. So but yeah, I do remember that was one of the first games that had cheat codes. That was really cool. But I don't know. But I don't really have any like long standing nostalgia for the game series or anything like that. So that didn't really factor in. I don't know. Pretty game. the other thing, so after I beat the single player mode of it, I dipped my toe into the, they have like a map creation mode of it. They have multiplayer too. Yeah. I wasn't going to do any of that, but they had like a map creation mode where you could like go and make your own levels.
Is map creation separate from multiplayer in that there's like you can do anything with a map if it's not multiplayer?
Yeah, like they have objectives where you can like spawn monsters and stuff like that, where you like make your own area and you can do that. I only played a few of them. They're okay. The only thing I didn't like about it is it kind of threw off the balance of the game, since like since some of the weapons you have in the game are like limited use. There's certain things in the game that you might only have access to like a few times, so they're a very special offense in the single player game. But in the map editor mode, they just give it to you, and you can use it infinite number of times. It's like, oh well, that kind of takes the fun away from that. But that was my only complaint with it. But I didn't really spend too much time with it. I think I'm pretty good after playing the game proper.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's I don't know. It's a pretty focused effort. In terms of what they were going for and what they achieved. So, it was cool.
Cool.
All right. The next one is I started playing TIS 100, which is a, like, it's an indie game about a...
It's a graphing calculator, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, it is a puzzle game, but it's like a computer simulator. Like, this is hardcore low-level assembly, like, memory bank management stuff, right?
Yeah, I kind of want to refer to these like genre of games as like job games, where it reminds me too much of work, and I don't know if these are my types of games. I played the first section of it, and yeah, it's fun. It's so the idea behind it or the story behind it is you find this Russian-made computer that has very limited series, has its own individual logic, but it's just never took off. And so you're like repairing it by programming in the logic of like the circuits. And it comes with a literal PDF document that you can look at for the manual of the game.
Yeah.
And it tells you the different like computer commands that you can do, but I don't know if it covers all of them or not. And then it'll just give you like this broken computer, and you have to figure out like, I think the thing that's very specific about it too is for every, like, I don't think there's a way to get rid of inputs. So you might have two inputs and you have to have two outputs as well. So like there's this, basically all the things you're doing is you're writing a basic program to take these inputs, combine them and do whatever you need to do, whether it's like something like addition or multiplication or comparing or something like that, low level stuff. You have to like make the pattern so that it passes through this machine and then goes to the proper outputs. And so you're given commands like how to move data from one like parallel processor to another, and then you're given things like how to save that data or how to swap it. It has like a two variable cache, and I don't know. It's interesting. It's kind of fun, but at the same time, it's when I play a game like this, I say like I could go learn Python and that would probably be more valuable, and I would be having about the same amount of fun. So, and I'm not saying that that's not fun, but I'm just saying that same amount of fun,
right?
So so I played it for maybe only an hour or two. I don't know if I'll go back into it or not, but it's definitely interesting. So if that's your type of jam, then that would be really cool. If you liked Human Resource Machine, for example, you would probably like this game.
Yeah,
so
Human Resource Machine is like a much friendlier, like it's like the Nerf version of this.
Yeah, it's like maybe the Nickelodeon version of this. You start with that game and then you work your way up to this if you're plowing through that genre for some reason.
Yeah. If this seems familiar, like if it sounds familiar, this is the same guy who did Space Chem or Infinifactory.
I do not know either of those games.
Yeah.
So I'll have to check this out.
Zachtronics. I think it's like one dude or a very small team.
Really?
Yeah.
It's definitely a minimalistic game. I mean, the interface is very limited, but it fits with the theme of the game. You know, it's a junky computer, so you don't have to make it look great. It's cool, but it might just not be for me.
Yeah.
But all right, and then the last one on the list is in a weird impromptu move, I played and beat Inside again in one sitting last night. Yeah. just because I think that was probably my second favorite game of the year last year, and I just wanted to play it again just to mostly just see the graphics of the game. Like, the world of that game is just so beautiful, and like just like every frame is just beautiful in that game. So it's definitely cool to go through that. I was trying to kind of pick up on more of the themes. A lot of people cite one of the themes of the game being like control and like your control over the character and like or just like controlling people in general. So I tried looking for that. I don't know. It was interesting. And then there's a very emotionally impactful thing that happens in the game. And when I got to that part of the game again, it wasn't as impactful. It could have been because it was pretty late at night, but I don't know. It was just interesting to play it again on a second run through.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, definitely the art style of that game still holds up the same way that I think Limbo's art style holds up today as well.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that's going to last for a really long time. But yeah.
It's a pretty game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And solid puzzle design as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah. Like, how quickly did it go? Like, you mentioned playing it like in one sitting. It's already a kind of short game, but I can only imagine like it's a little bit of a breeze if you even if you just vaguely remember the puzzles.
That's kind of how it worked. Like, so I think it's 4 hours the first sitting. This time it might have been like 2 to 3 hours. So you definitely shave off a good amount of time by remembering some of the puzzles, but it was like maybe half of the puzzles I remembered, half of them I had to figure out, and I had a good intuition on what the solution was. But yeah.
Hmm. Is that all?
Yep. That's all I got.
Cool. So I'll do mine. One of the big games I played a lot, just because I have been a little bit under the weather, and so spending a lot of time in bed, Mini Metro.
Ooh.
I know we spoke about that a little while back. Have it on iPad. And that is a wonderful way to play that particular game, just because the interface is already incredibly simple. This is the transit system design game that has the visual style that kind of maps to a literal like metro map, where you have colored lines and stations of different shapes and riders who kind of queue up at these different stations wanting to get to different places, and you have to use a limited number of lines, cars, and trains and tunnels to get people where they need to go. I feel like I'm doing okay. Like, I'm pretty, depending on the map, I'm able to last a couple of months, which is nice. Move somewhere in the number of thousands of people. I have no basis for comparison if that's good or not, but yeah, it's a very enjoyable game, and it is a little bit like that flight plan kind of thing, where it very slowly but very surely gets out of control, as it feels like it is intentionally trying to fuck with you, because as you're as you're playing, it will just pop up new stations, right? So you just you'll be running along, and then bloop, here's a station that could be a new shape or some other thing. But like, say it's a quadrant of the map that has a whole bunch of circles, and every line kind of terminates on a circle station as well. Like, okay, well, let's put another circle station over here where you have to waste a stop and add more congestion by either extending one of those. You generally want to make sure your line goes from like circle to square to triangle. Like, it doesn't benefit you to run from the same shape to another. And so that's a situation that I haven't been able to figure out how to adapt to yet, but it's a very elegantly designed game, I think, insofar as, there's no interface really, but it communicates what you need to communicate, and anything else, you learn by experimentation. Just kind of the way things work, and what optimal pathways are.
So here's my question for you. Do you do lines or do you do loops?
It is either or. So I will do like a loop on an outside, and then do lines that will cross through it. So it's almost like an interstate design.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
My question is, how stress inducing does it get when you're playing it?
I mean, it's never, it's never too bad. Like, it gives you an awful lot of time, when a station gets backed up and it communicates to you, like, hey, there are people here. And there are small little tricks you can do, like quick little reroutes. Like, there's no cost associated with rerouting a line. And you also have the ability to, like, pause everything and say, like, okay, I need to do some real surgery on this entire thing right now to sort this out. So you can pause it, do all the rerouting, and then it'll change on the fly as the trains complete their routes.
So on a scale from ICOM to XCOM, would you give it like a VI ICOM or
I don't know. Like, what does a 4 out of 10 map to?
It's a IVCOM.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. but it's pretty great. I couldn't imagine playing it on a phone, just because that screen would be very tiny. But on an iPad, I think that is the perfect size thing to have this incredibly stark design set out in front of you, and to kind of like lean back and then just kind of like, there are these nice calm moments in between when the stops will change, or, you know, like when it will throw a monkey wrench into your plan, where you can just watch your system operate, you know,
and listen to it operate.
Yeah.
And so, well, you're on an iPad, so I don't know if you're playing with the sound on.
I play with the sound on. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Yeah. So that is that has been a nice thing. Mini Metro. Like, I think that is an A+ game. No, A+ is probably a little bit too much, but I would definitely recommend people who would be down for, like, it doesn't even matter that it's like transit themed. Honestly, it is just you know, you're trying to route things in the most efficient way possible. Yeah. Cool. The other thing, and I've talked a lot about this in the past, but over the weekend, or on Friday rather, I made two kind of big purchases. Because I've had a little bit of a music bug lately, due to starting up the REM show, and I bought a new guitar and a new amp.
Nice! Yeah, yeah. I saw a picture of those.
Yeah, so it is an Epiphone Les Paul, it's a sunburst or whatever, orange to black on the front. It's real cool. Sounds great. Spent a lot of Friday getting it set up and restringed and all of that. And
I saw you playing Rocksmith over the weekend. Were you using your guitar for that?
That is exactly the game I was playing. Yes. Nice. So I decided to fire it up. So I've spent a lot of time playing Rocksmith, mostly a couple years ago. And I kind of fell off of it for kind of apartment reasons. And also because my guitar that I used for that, was a red, Squire Stratocaster that I got that I bought, that plus the like 15 watt like Frontman amp for like $125 from somebody who wanted to get rid of it my senior year of high school. And like, the pickups are fucked up, like the electronics are all weird, and it's like, it's untenable to play with this piece of garbage anymore. So when I got this new guitar, I was like, okay, I need to, you know, it's been a while since I've played electric, I want to, you know, jump back into this. So I fired up Rocksmith
Smoke 2014. On the water.
No, I mean, or more like, what's a frequency, Kenneth? You know, but I fired up Rocksmith 2014, that game that, you know, like, you use a real guitar as the actual controller, and started playing around with it. And yeah, I'm rusty. Like, I'm rusty on doing leads and stuff. But that game is an amazing kind of teaching tool for particular songs. And it was... You know, I went to some of my old standbys and standards, and after a couple of different loops, I was not back up to where I was, but it was very fun to play this new guitar run it through this game. I guess in the intervening time, they've updated the game. It's like Rocksmith 2014 remastered or something like that. There are songs that I don't remember being in there, so I guess they just gave me a bunch of free songs in the remaster. Yes. So hey,
cool. I like the stubbornness and not being willing to change like it to 2016 or something. Yeah. Like that. Well, like,
I mean, it's confusing, right? Like, I don't understand why they didn't just release a new product. Maybe that would have been too much work. Maybe they've already, you know, like, the improvements that they could make are not, they wouldn't warrant a full extra release for the thing. Yeah, but that is that has been a tremendous amount of fun to do that. The amp that I got, it is a Vox VT20 Plus, if that's something anybody's curious about. It is a tube amp, but it's a modeler as well. So like the top has all of these awesome little controls to do onboard effects and, you know, make it sound kind of however you want. So some of that stuff is a little junky, like people like to do that with pedals or whatever, but for my purposes, because I'm always going to be playing it on like low power mode, I don't need to have all that stuff. I just want to have an amp that will sound like I want it to sound. That is not related to the game. That is just something that I've had a lot of fun playing with.
That's allowed.
Yeah.
So what are some of your old standbys that you've gone back to learn on guitar?
On Rocksmith?
Just in general, but either one, Rocksmith or off Rocksmith.
Yeah. On Rocksmith, I'm pretty much always down for something like, I like the rhythm guitar mode in Rocksmith a lot more. So anything that is really heavily chord based, and keep in mind, these are not songs that I otherwise would listen to an awful lot. Like if I never have to hear Mary Jane's Last Dance again, that's probably fine, but that's an incredibly fun song to play. you know, just because it is open chords at the neck with all these little flourishes and stuff like that. I really enjoy, obviously there are like Queens of the Stone Age songs on there. Like My God is the Sun is a very fun song to do, off of their 2013 album. I've got that at like 98% mastery or something like that. Mm-hmm. Which is an awful lot of fun. Oh gosh, Pixies, Where Is My Mind is very easy, but it is fun to lean into. The REM pack is very good as well.
Cross promotion, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just said like that's what got it in there. But like the rhythm mode on Losing My Religion is an awful lot of fun. Like it's basically an acoustic song, but you have these little, again, doodles, these Peter Buckisms that are thrown in there that are really fun to do on electric guitar. Same thing with What's the Frequency, Kenneth? Yeah. I never do anything that's like super insanely hard, just because I don't think that interface communicates very busy solos very well. And maybe it's just because I'm not really good at playing solos. I don't do any kind of shred kind of stuff, but yeah, something that is really intermediate is a lot of fun to do.
So is this game like a Rock Band where you have to like unlock songs at all, or do they just give you all of them from the outset?
It's all there from the outset. And the way that they manage that, so like they don't even really show you what the difficulty level is for a particular song. Like it's not communicated that way. What it does is you go through basic versions of the song or basic versions of different phrases, and as you play them, it adds more kind of complexity. So like,
yeah,
picture something like In Bloom by Nirvana. You know, that is a song that is made up mostly of power chords, but like when you first fire that up, it'll be like, okay, you're playing the fourth fret of the lowest string, and then like it'll take you up and like you're just going to be hitting just the bass notes, and then it'll give you like a couple more strings, a couple more of the chords to hit until it ultimately is communicating like, hey, this is just the box pattern that you're doing for the entire verse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, but you know, it's got plenty of DLC. It's been a lot of fun going back in. Like, one of the bands that I listened to a lot in high school was Brand New, the kind of emo band. So it was very fun to like realize, oh, there's a pack of those from the best album they did. So I'm just gonna get those and then play around on this, because you know I just like those songs and they're fun to play. So it's a cool. it definitely brooks that kind of exploration and fucking around. Very well.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I want a drum version of that game.
Yeah. So like what's weird about it is like that would just it would almost have to go in through like a MIDI kind of thing. Like it just, oh, here's an electric drum set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But those are different. Electric drum sets are different than mm-hmm. acoustic drum sets. I when I say actual drum set, it sounds like I'm being dismissive of electric drums, which I'm not. It's not my jam to look down. Oh, so yeah, that's been my that has been my thing. Looking forward to, very excited to playing Resident Evil 7.
Yeah, yeah. I wish I could play it, but you know,
yeah,
money's.
Jala, you should bump up your Cincinnati trip to as soon as possible so that you can just play Resident Evil 7 then.
Right, there you go. Since Allison already finished, I can do it VR. I can just go camp out at Allison's place.
Cool. So that sounds like a podcast. Do you want to button it up?
Buttons.
All right.
Let's.
I wish that the tagline for the level was, "It sounds like a podcast." That's what I think every time we say that at the end of the episode.
It's a pretty good
sounds
tagline.
Like a podcast.
Sounds like a podcast to me. Thank you so much for listening to level number 182. So close to 200, everybody. We're going to be there in just a couple of months. I could probably do that math, but I'm not going to. So
you got to ask us that question at the start of the night, not the end.
We're all out of juice. You know the usual stuff that you can do. It's been a little bit since we've had a rating or review on iTunes, so we would love to see that. If you're a new listener and you take the time, we would very much appreciate if you could. Check out patreon.com/duckfeedtv if you want to find out ways to support the network and also get cool stuff on the back of that support. And also check out like new shows. We've got, you know, the aforementioned REM show getting ready to start up in about a week after you hear this. It starts up on February the 1st. That will be called File Underwater. We've recorded the first two episodes and it's a lot of fun. In addition to that, things like Radio Free Midworld, we just put out an episode about the Eyes of the Dragon, and that we were joined by Zach from Video Game Soft Dog to talk about that, and we also had Autumn Greer on, who is like MVP of that show. But yeah, plenty of stuff. Like, go to duckfeed.tv. I think you're gonna like all that. I hope you do anyway. Let us know if you do. Am I forgetting anything?
Don't think so.
All right. So I have been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm always Jolichan in places.
Sometimes Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Very occasionally.
Once a year.
And stick around for some titles.
It's dwindling. Yeah, maybe it's because I'm on medication because I'm sick.
Yeah, I only have one. They can't all be bangers, you know.
Ah.
So let's see, Jolly. Go ahead. What are the four you got?
Okay, David, the real life Witcher. Shared seed. Hashtag why I game.
Oh no.
And like exercise, but not good for you.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. Dennis, how about you?
I had mostly different. I had, I crashed my house. past the Buffy mark. The mundane of the horror. Like exercise, but not good for you. And then on a scale of ICOM to XCOM.
Okay. All right. Ben, how about you?
I got Sperm Adverse. I have IVCOM. And I have the level colon, it sounds like a podcast.
Okay. I only have one, and it is simply, you bet your ass. So not an awful lot of crossover. The one that has two votes is like exercise but not good for you. Mm-hmm. That is a little lengthy.
Yeah
I would agree with that.
Let's see, of the ones that got that got laughs were it sounds like a podcast, I crashed my house, shared seed, or you bet your ass. So does anybody want to make an impassioned plea for any of those?
I want to know what that noise is. Seriously.
Yeah, what is that noise?
That's me taking the cap off my Indian food. I forgot that this will probably show up on the podcast. Sorry.
Don't worry. Does anybody want to make an impassioned plea?
I like shared seed because it is not over. It's not quite spermaverse, but it's okay. Still you can get there.
Right. Okay.
Definitely not classy though.
Oh no. Definitely not. are there any objections to that? Or are there any folks who have a different one that they want to put forward?
I'll make an impassioned plea for IVCOM because I think it's clever.
I don't know how to stylize that is the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fine. Make it shared seed.
Okie doke. I mean, it's not inherently dirty.
Well, I wrote that down as one of my potential titles too, so I can't be like kicking at the dirt about it.
Yeah. All right, let's do it. So shared seed it is.
Done.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go. I'm going to play one or two songs in Rocksmith so I can rebuild my calluses because those are gone. And I'm going to go to bed. So
I'm going to medicate myself and shower and then sleep.
Yeah.
So
feel better, please.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah. You guys.
Yeah. Everybody.
Everybody better.
Well, mostly Cole. Yeah. And Ben and Dennis of the average weeks, you were okay.
Try and keep it average.
Right. Keep it average.
Yep. All right. See you guys. Take care, everybody. Bye.
All right.
See you guys. See you.